J-Knights, and welcome back to the What the Austin podcast. Kaylee is back on the podcast today, and we've got another fun episode lined up. We are going to be covering cross-novel couples. I think that's probably the best way to describe this. So we're going to be matching characters from some books to other books. So for instance, we could match Emma to Captain Wentworth, or we could match Catherine Morland to Mr. Darcy is what we're going with. So we're just going to make some kind of fun crossover matches that we think might work. We're going to explain why we think they work. And yeah, it's just going to be a fun episode. We hope it gets you thinking about, you know, couples that could be in a parallel universe. So yeah, I'm really excited to do this. Kaylee, are you excited?
I'm so excited to do this. We initially were kind of going back and forth between making it just main character crossovers or adding in side characters. And we decided to just do the main heroines and their love interests. Although we can't help it, there were a few main character, side characters that we thought would be great together. So we're really curious to see what you think.
There are some such good picks for some of the side characters that I was just like, I've got to keep that on my list. I can't not.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And it was so funny to do this exercise too, because certain crossover pairs I thought of immediately, and I kept it, and I really visualized this relationship. And then other crossover pairs, I could not see certain characters with any other character. I really saw them with their original character that Jane matched them with. So I'm so curious if you had similar thoughts.
Oh my gosh, I did. And I'm going to be like totally honest. Like, I think we maybe came up with this idea a while back, but you definitely ran with this more than me. And then when I started to plan it, I was like, How am I going to do this episode? I can't think of anything. So I definitely found it difficult, but then I did start coming up with a few that I was like, I kind of feel this. So I'm excited. As a lot of you who watch on YouTube will notice, I am in a different space. It's probably going to be the case for a couple of weeks now. If you're interested in tarot at all, I am going through what most people consider a tower moment. So there's so much change going on, which is why I think just like a fun episode is definitely needed at this point. So I'm so glad that you're back with me, Kaylee. And I've got my espresso martini, but considering Kaylee's in the US, she's got coffee, right? You've just got standard coffee.
I've got my Jane Austen mug here. It's 1 p.m, but I like fully support this espresso martini situation. I wish I had some.
It is the evening for me, so it's okay. It's fine, guys, you know.
Oh my gosh, girl. Yeah. I think we've both been having our tower moments, so this is just going to be a fun stream of conscious episode, and we're okay with it being a little more disorganized. Sometimes that's when our best ideas come out, so.
I think so. And, you know, a lot of people listening, I was saying to Kaylee, you guys loved the unpopular opinions episode. And so we're definitely thinking of just like fitting in more kind of fun conversational episodes like this in. I think we're definitely going to do some more unpopular opinion episodes because that was really fun. And obviously you guys really enjoyed that. So there will be more of that kind of thing coming as well. But are you happy to jump into today's topic, start matching some crossover novel couples?
Absolutely. And speaking of unpopular opinions, I think some of these couples, you know, there will be a lot of head nods, and then I think other people I've matched will be very unpopular opinions. So again, so looking forward to hearing all the feedback.
Oh my God, I'm excited.
Me too. And it's going to be so fun to see where we align and where we disagree. Okay, I'm going to start with a couple that I feel really passionate about, and I saw them together from the beginning, and as I kept overthinking, they stayed the same. I think that Marianne and Captain Wentworth would be a really amazing couple together.
Oh, interesting. So I didn't have that one on my list. I want to hear your reasoning, and then I'll give you my thoughts.
Okay. So the reason that I saw Marianne and Captain Wentworth together is they're both extremely passionate and they're very steadfast in their convictions. Marianne has this view about love. She has this quote where she says, "He admires as a lover, not as a connoisseur." to satisfy me, those characters must be united. I could not be happy with a man whose taste did not in every point coincide with my own. He must enter into all my feelings, the same books, the same music, must charm us both. She's very, very intense about her beliefs and, you know, Wentworth too.
His like dining room scene. Oh my God, that instantly came to mind when you're reading the Marianne quote.
Exactly, right? He's so passionate and he gets so angry if people, you know, don't agree with his convictions. He gets really upset that, you know, Anne is persuaded out of marrying him. And, you know, when he has this conversation with Louisa too, she says, if I loved a man as she loves the Admiral, I would always be with him. Nothing should ever separate us, and I would rather be overturned by him than driven safely by anyone else. And Wentworth goes, had you, I honor you. And then Louisa, you know, there it goes on and on. She goes, I had no idea of being so easily persuaded. When I've made up my mind, I have made it. And then Wentworth goes, to have such a mind as yours at hand, your sister's an amiable creature, but yours is a character of decision and firmness, I see. It's the worst evil to be too yielding and indecisive a character. Isn't that
cool? Oh, that scene makes me cringe so bad because let's be clear, Anna's sat at the other end of the table. She overhears all of this and she's just like, this is a backhanded dig that nobody gets but me. Like, can you imagine? It's like the opposite of an inside joke. It's an inside, like, dig.
I know. I do feel for Anne because he is just, you're right. He's just so, it's such an attack on Anne. But it also shows he really has beliefs about you need to know who you are, you need to know what you want, and you need to go after it. And don't you think that's so aligned with Marianne and her views of love and how you show love and how loyal you need to be and how over the top you need to be in showing affection to your partner?
Yes, and also the fact that both of them are able to articulate that in front of others. You know, they have like no doubts about their like their deepest values. They're just like, I'll say this at the dinner table. Because like, do you remember Marianne says that whole comment about how she thinks like people can only have one partner. They can't like go on and then love another person. And that's like her point on like Brandon. And she says that in public as well. And it's really interesting that Marianne and Wentworth have like so much conviction around their like values that they're literally just like, I will say this in person because I believe this so deeply that nobody will shake this for me. And I just think that's a very specific character trait.
Exactly. That was another reason too, was I was remembering that exact part where Marianne is talking about attachments and Wentworth has this same belief. It's you love someone, you choose them, you commit to them. And what I find so interesting is although they both have those convictions, they both are betrayed in a sense by someone they love. But then they end up being open to a second attachment. And for him, it's with the woman he originally loved. And then Marianne, it's with someone new. But yeah.
It's so true. It's like they're both so steadfast, but then like so much happens to them. And I feel like they're kind of shaken by their own actions, like Marianne shaken the fact that she was so vulnerable with Willoughby and it was like slapped back in her face. And Wentworth has to accept the fact that he was leading Louisa on for, you know, lack of a better term. And then he has to accept the fact that, you know, he will have to deal with the consequences of that. Like he did that, even though, oh my gosh, honestly, sometimes Wentworth, like partway through the book, he just really, really gets on my last nerve and the fact that he does this. But at the end of the day, like he does lead Louisa on and he has to accept that he will have to marry Louisa because of that. Like even though he did all of that and he's like, I'm in love with Anne, it's like nobody knows that, friend. Just because you know that you love Anne, like nobody else is aware of this and you have literally been caught in a different woman. So I think both of them have to accept the consequences of their actions and then that leads them to be a little bit more maybe empathetic is the wrong word, but they kind of soften on those like steadfast views.
I was going to say, yeah, I think the word I was thinking of when you were describing that was grounded. I think they're so spirited and passionate and they both calm it down a little bit by the end and yeah, or more grounded. I think another really, it's so interesting because I imagine if Marianne and Wentworth had met and fallen in love, I could see Marianne being really open to Captain Wentworth's sense of adventure and novelty. Like, I think even before he came into wealth, I think Marianne would have agreed to go off with him, and she wouldn't be afraid to be a woman at sea. Like, just like she has her passion for dead leaves. Can you imagine? She'd like look out on the ocean and write all this poetry about the depths of the waves. Like, she'd be content having that mobile life with him.
Yeah, and I think something else you'd really appreciate about Willoughby is how expressive he is. Like, if you think about a lot of the other heroes, the way that they kind of express themselves, like, think about Knightley, where he's like, if I loved you less, I might be able to talk about it more. But Wentworth, in comparison, I know he doesn't verbalize his feelings, but he does write them down. And there's no shutting him up when he starts talking about his feelings. Like, he pours his heart out, and I feel like Marianne would be so just like susceptible to that. She'd be like, oh my god, this is exactly who I'm after.
Oh my gosh, wait, yes, that goes exactly with my next point, which is, remember when Marianne talks about how much she loves Copper? It's hard for me to pronounce it in an American accent. She loves that poet. He's known as a poet. So Copper is considered one of the forerunners of romanticism. She loves romantic poetry. And think about Wentworth in his letter to Anne, how romantic.
I am half agony, half hope. I mean, yeah, like Wordsworth could have written that. Like, this is deep stuff.
Right? Like, I can listen no longer in silence. I must speak to you by means that are within my reach. You pierce my soul. I am half agony, half hope. Tell me not that I am too late, that such precious feelings are gone forever. And then, you know, further down, dare not say that man forgets sooner than woman, that his love has an earlier death. Can't you just imagine Marianne soaking that up? Like, that could be a romantic poet.
Literally, yeah, she would eat that up like no one's business. I mean, we all eat that up, let's be honest. We're all here like, oh my god. But yeah, Marianne would love that. That's exactly what she tells her mum that she wants from a man. She's like, I want this like deep, burning, passionate love that somebody, you know, cannot contain their feelings for me, which is the kind of the problem that she has with Edward, that he just doesn't have that kind of expression when it comes to his feelings. But Wentworth really does. Like, even though he doesn't, like I said, he doesn't say this like verbally, his letter is so beautiful. And I also think, like, think of all the letter writing between Marianne and Willoughby. Obviously, that is a form that she likes, you know, that is something that she enjoys to do with a romantic partner. Like, Willoughby and Marianne did spend a lot of time together. It's not like they just then didn't like communicate. Like, they spent like whatever, like a long period of time writing letters after that. So yeah, I think she'd love it. I feel like she'd be up for that. My only query with it would be the fact that Wentworth chooses Anne makes a lot of sense, because Anne is so measured with her feelings. And I feel like there's a good balance there. Like, Wentworth is so outspoken with his feelings, even the ones that are like, you know, like we're saying, like his convictions about his values. And he's really outspoken with that. And he's really outspoken with his romantic feelings as well. Anne is kind of the opposite, that she keeps her cards close to her chest. Well, I mean, I think a really good example of this is the fact that literally none of her family members knew about her situation with Wentworth. Like, she didn't talk to anybody about it. She kept it to herself. Whereas Marianne, everybody knew what was going on with Willoughby. And I just don't know if maybe Wentworth and Marianne are too similar in the way that they love, that they would clash. It would be like too much passion, maybe, like too much romance, too much excitement. That, how does that translate to like mundane everyday life?
I thought about that too initially. I thought, okay, if we bring these two passionate people together, will it be almost volatile? Will it be too much? Will it explode? Like, will there be enough measuredness? And I guess the reason I thought it would still work is, first of all, because they have this novel lifestyle where they're traveling so much, there's so much new adventure where I think they could bond over that. And then I was like, is this going to be too much like Marianne and Willoughby? But I actually think that Wentworth is the perfect combination of Willoughby and Colonel Brandon. I think he has Willoughby's, he's like a more evolved Willoughby plus Brandon. Like, he's very confident. He knew even when he didn't have money that he was going to be successful. He's just so passionate. He loves, the letter that he writes. He has this romantic quality and this directness that Marianne loves. But then he also is responsible. Like, he makes a career for himself. He has Colonel Brandon's loyalty and commitment. And so I do think it would be a fiery one, but I think he could be a little bit more measured, and I think they could work out. I do.
That's interesting. I guess we can only speculate, but there is the potential that Anne was more romantic in her younger years. Like, obviously by the time her and Wentworth get their second chance, they've both like grown up, you know what I mean? They're like older at that point, like things have changed. And I don't think that Anne would ever be on Marianne's level, but there may have been more kind of romantic, naive tendencies. The fact that it wasn't Anne herself who convinced herself that Wentworth wasn't a good match, that she needed to be persuaded, would suggest to me that she was more of like, innocent in romance. Does that make sense? Like, I think like she maybe went like head first in it, and then it's been other people who've been like, whoa, 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 like this might not be a good match. You need to do like a second guess on this. Whereas I think like older Anne, she doesn't do that. She doesn't jump head first in things. Like, she thinks about things. She thinks things through. You know, she is the reliable one. She's the responsible one. But I feel like, I mean, we can only speculate, but I feel like maybe she had more of those Marianne tendencies when she was younger, before she was disappointed, before she was heartbroken, before she spent like a decade waiting for this man and then was worried that he, even at that point, wasn't going to come back to her.
You mean she had a decade losing her bloom? Everyone, Wentworth is so mean about her appearance. I love Wentworth, but that is like such a cringe moment.
Oh my god, I was thinking about this earlier. I was thinking, I'm not being funny, but doesn't Wentworth have so much like Frank Churchill energy? It like the first part of the book, like he really gives me that vibe. Like, he's so arrogant. And like, do you know the way that Frank Churchill kind of is mean about Jane Fairfax in public, and Jane can't say anything because they've got this secret? Wentworth really does that to Anne as well. Like, he makes comments to her family members in public and makes comments when she's there. And it's not like Anne can turn around and be like, I'm sorry, friend. Do you remember we were connected at one time? Like, Anne wouldn't do that. Like, Jane Fairfax wouldn't do that, because it would just blow the cover in a sense. But I'm like, Wentworth gives me a lot of Frank Churchill vibes at the start of the book.
I think that's fair. I think that's right. The way that, just how meanly he talks about her, and sort of the insensitivity, how he's flirting with other people and what he says when she's around. I think with Wentworth, it comes from a place where he's been so hurt and his ego's bruised. So it's not actually how he is. It's like this overcompensation. Whereas Frank Churchill, I think, is more, he hasn't been hurt. I think it's more like mischievous. I think it's a little bit more like conniving, cunning, even though he's fine. Like, he's someone I'd want to hang out with as a friend.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, that is true. Like, Wentworth's had his pride hurt. It's kind of funny that Pride and Prejudice is called Pride and Prejudice, is called Persuasion, because I'm literally just like, Wentworth has such intense pride. Like, do you know what I mean? It's not the same as Darcy's, because he's not initially wealthy, but like his, like, I don't know, like his feelings towards himself. He's like, you hurt my pride. I knew my worth. I knew my value. And you refused me. Like, that really hits him, like his ego, massively.
That's such a good point. And then when you said that about Pride and Prejudice, but then it's Wentworth with a ton of pride, that immediately made me think of Elizabeth Bennet and how she's persuaded to not like Mr. Darcy and instead favor Wickham for a while.
Oh, yeah, all these prideful men. You know, Austin was, she was dishing it out to us. They've got to go on a journey, guys. You know, they've got to figure their stuff out, and then they come back. Let them have their emotions and they will come back, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Darcy and Wentworth. A lot of pride going on there.
100%. Okay. Do you want to move on to the next pick, or have you got more you want to add for Wentworth and Marianne? I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think so too. I think that was it with them. Okay, so I would say, I'm curious what you think about this one. This was another couple that I really saw working. I know you have your opinions about this heroine, so I'm so curious.
Oh God, I'm scared.
I think Edward Ferrars and Fanny Price would be a good couple.
Do you ever wish you could sit in on a conversation with some of your favorite authors and listen to them talk about their writing process, their path to publication, and of course, their newest novels? Hi, I'm Marissa Meyer, best-selling author of The Lunar Chronicles, and I would love for you to check out the Happy Writer podcast, where every week I talk with other writers about books, craft, inspiration, and how to bring a little more joy into our lives. The Happy Writer is available wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on Instagram at Happy Writer Podcast.
I think I had that on my list. I'm going to check, but I'm pretty... Yep, I had that on my list as well. That was the only match I could make for Fanny. I don't know about you. Yeah,
that was one of the first crossover couples that came to mind too. Do you want to start with why you chose them or...
So for me, it was kind of like, it's not that I think this would be a perfect match, but I think they would be happy together. I think they'd definitely be super private. I can't see there being much passion in the relationship, but I think they would be comfortable. They would have a happy married life. Obviously, they're both inclined towards like Christianity, which I think would help. You know, they have their religion in common. Obviously, Edward goes and becomes a clergyman and Fanny is like a pretty devout Christian. I think she is like the most, like, I think Mansfield Park out of all the novels is the only one that's kind of emphasizes Christianity. I don't see that. And I don't feel that in any of the other novels at all. I think Fanny, more than any of the other heroines, apart from Eleanor, who obviously ends up with Edward, is the fact that Edward gets cut off wouldn't bother Fanny at all, because Fanny comes from nothing anyway. And so the small amount that Edward can create for himself would be enough for Fanny. She would be able to manage that. And I think that would actually be really handy for someone like Edward, because Edward's not very forthcoming. He's not an action guy. So, I mean, the fact that Fanny could really handle the small income that they have and be really happy on that. Like, every time I think about Fanny, I think of her in her bedroom, you know, where she like really is like grateful for the small things that she has, like her little bookshelf she really loves. Like, it's just like the small possessions. She's very minimalistic, and that is the life that she would have with Edward, I would say.
We are so aligned on this. You made all of the points I was going to make. I think absolutely agree with you. I think Fanny would be content to live on a minimal income. You can just see her supporting him as a clergyman. You can see her helping him write his sermons. You know, she's so well versed with the Bible. They're both very pious. I think they both also have this commitment to honor, commitment to doing what's right. Like, she, similarly yes. to Eleanor, I think would have really valued that he stayed with Lucy Steele and didn't break his word.
Yes. I think Fanny would have liked that more than Eleanor. Like, Fanny's moral compass is so strong, it's so important to her, that even if she is at a disadvantage from people sticking to it, that's more important to her. Like, if you think about like the thing with the performance and like the theater situation, you know, she is like so adamantly against that. Like, that is just like goes against, because she doesn't want to upset Sir Thomas. And I'm just like, yeah, she's very family first. And I think that would actually play in Edward's favor. Like, she's so loyal, so committed.
Absolutely. Yes, the way she stands up about the play is so values aligned and parallel to the way that Edward stands up to Lucy. And even though they're both known as shyer, more in the background characters, when it comes to their moral compass, they will stand up for what's right. And I think they would admire that in each other. They're both shy and meek, and I think they're okay, both of them, with living in the background a little bit. I really think so. Edward gets overwhelmed by people whose personalities are too loud. I think he's even like a little bit intimidated by Marianne, like people who are really overly direct. And I think Fanny's a bit the same way. I think where they're different is Fanny, I think, just like you said, will take charge and be a little bit more decisive. Edward's super indecisive, and I think she could help him in a practical sense, and I think she could ground him, like bring him a little bit back down to earth. I have this quote about Edward. Yeah. He was too diffident to do justice to himself, but when his natural shyness was overcome, his behavior gave every indication of an open, affectionate heart. His understanding was good. His education had given it solid improvement. I think for Fanny, when she gets annoyed with Edmund is when he goes off and is hanging out with Mary Crawford and other people. I think she just wants someone where she can be in the background with them, but she knows that she's the number one priority. And I see Edward liking that she grounds him, and then Edward, I can see him fawning over her and like giving her the attention that she needs.
Yes, I have a few thoughts on this. One is you should be the number one like priority. Obviously, people should have other things going on in their life, but I'm not being funny, but Edmund making Fanny plan B will forever vex me. I'm sorry. It's wrong, okay? Don't settle, friends. But then also something that I picked up on what you were saying is they're both so self-aware of their shyness and their kind of like their ability to be more reserved. And I think that's so beneficial because I think they could both communicate that to each other and be like, look, this is what we're willing to experience in like our social environment, but also we're both really introverted, so we need time alone and we need more of a private life than most people. And I agree, I think for Fanny that would be so much more valuable. Like, I don't know, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Edmund, but yeah, I think Edward would be able to provide her with more comfort than Edmund ever could. Just like, I'm not even talking like materialistic comfort. I'm just talking like soul comfort. Like, I feel like Edmund would constantly test Fanny's morals, Fanny's, you know, her convictions. Whereas I don't think Edward ever would, because he is very much aligned. And I actually think it would be valuable for Fanny to be in a relationship where she can take more charge, where she can be the person that does actionable tasks, if that makes sense. And I think she would step up to the plate and do that. My only reservation about that, the coupling, is if you're the clergy of a village, you've got to be the people that kind of bring the community together. And I don't know if the two of them together would be capable of that. Like, if you think about Mr. Collins and Charlotte, like, they would be quite good at bringing the community together, you know, linking people like Lady Catherine de Bourgh to people who are just in general society, like bringing that together in hosting like big events, but things where it's like, you know, as a church community, this is what we do. We want to like help out with the parish, that kind of thing. And I think Edward and Fanny are both so shy that I don't see them reaching out, you know, in that extroverted sense where they're like, come on everybody, let's do this stuff for the church, you know what I mean? And that could actually affect things for the community.
I think those are both really good points. I was really struck by the first thing you said, which is I think you're right that Fanny, because of her situation being brought into that house and treated like a second-class citizen, she was taught that she needed to be in the background. But I think you're right that she's naturally suited to take charge. And I think in their relationship, she would do well by taking charge and taking initiative. So I was like, oh, wow, that's a really good point. And then I think they would be well suited as clergymen and clergyman's wife and her support of him. But you're right. Would they be the people who bring together the community? I think that's a good point. I think no. And then that made my mind go to, I wish it was kind of the Sense and Sensibility setup where Fanny had a sister who was maybe more social, and then she and her husband could be more of the social bridgers. I'm like, it would be nice if Mr. Bingley was like right next door. Mr. Bingley and his wife could help, I don't know, bring together the community for Fanny and Edward. I loved it. We had all the same thoughts too. That was awesome. The next one, this was interesting because both of these characters I initially placed with other people, and I think that they could also do well with other crossovers. But I think Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Knightley would be a phenomenal power couple.
Oh my God. I did not pair them together. I don't think I paired anyone with Elizabeth, you know? I had a lot of pairs for Mr. Knightley, but yeah, I had none for Elizabeth. So I'm fascinated to know your points. I want to hear.
That's so interesting. So I had two for Elizabeth. All right, I'll start with, and I had multiple for Mr. Knightley too. Okay, so I'll start with Elizabeth and Mr. Knightley as a power couple. I think both of them, I think, have this social savviness about people. I think that they can read people extremely well, as particularly they can see when manipulation is happening. And I could see the two of them being really intelligent in a room, seeing a lot of malarkey going on with other people, and just both of them making eye contact and smiling at each other, and just this knowing look of, oh my gosh, this is this ridiculous thing that's happening. I had Mr. Knightley initially partnered up with other heroines I respect, but when think about Mr. Knightley with Emma, I think he's so attracted to Emma's spirit. And I actually think of Elizabeth and Emma having a similar liveliness. Like, Elizabeth says that she loves a good laugh. She loves getting into these intellectual conversations and debates. And Mr. Knightley is entertained by that. He likes that. I don't know. What are your thoughts on those preliminary thoughts?
No, I love that. I think it's so true. I think what separates Mr. Knightley from having a female friend to a female lover is the liveliness. That is actually what he's romantically attracted to, because there's so many women that he can have friendships with that don't have that same liveliness as Emma and Elizabeth do, that same kind of headstrong, outgoing nature where they just say things and they're just like, they have fun with life. Because if you think about like his friendship with Mrs. Weston, and you think about the respect that he had for Jane Fairfax, they don't share the same characteristics as Emma and Elizabeth. So I agree with that. I think that is what he looks for in a romantic partner. And I do kind of love it. They're both so intellectual. So I can see that, because I feel like Elizabeth really does thrive off that. Like, if you think about her, I mean, this sounds a bit weird when I say this now, but her relationship with her father is that they have like this intellectual connection where that they can kind of make jokes about people. And you are right about the fact that they both observe people in such a detail that they can be like, friend, this person's a joke. Like, and I think, yeah, they probably would. Yeah, I kind of love this match, and I didn't make it, and I kind of love it.
I see them as just being such a strong power couple. I think, yeah, that they have such a, so he will admire her liveliness and she will respect his intelligence and goodness. And he has, you know, Mr. Knightley, you imagine him as sort of a knight in shining armor. He's sort of heroic. He saves the underdog. And I think Elizabeth really appreciates that quality of Mr. Darcy. And so I see her liking that for Mr. Knightley. I also think that both Mr. Knightley and Elizabeth have a strong sense of propriety. Like, Mr. Knightley, he's my dream man. He's my favorite. The one thing I don't like about him sometimes is when Emma does something selfish or socially inappropriate, he should put her in her place, but he's like, badly done, Emma. Sometimes it comes across as a little bit condescending. And I think with Elizabeth, she would know the proprietous thing to do in the first place. And like Elizabeth with her family too, she'll get embarrassed when her mom and her younger sisters, and even occasionally her father, like, do something that isn't socially acceptable. So I think Mr. Knightley and Elizabeth share that mutual value too.
Yes, I love that. And also, they both appreciate time on their own. Like, they appreciate reflective time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And I think they probably would have like such a enjoyable private life. Like, they are both really good at going out in society and just like being interesting people to spend time with and being likable people. But I also think they'd have a really, I don't know, just beautiful like private life. where they could be like reflective and also intellectual, like they could have like intellectually stimulating conversations with each other, and they could spend time with each other, but also doing their own thing and be comfortable. And I kind of love that. And it also made me think about what Elizabeth's missing with Darcy. And I think that's that mentorship that Knightley offers. Like, Knightley comes with so much wisdom, and he's willing to be like, look, this is where you've gone wrong. And I think that's such an important thing to have in a partner, like somebody who points out your flaws. Not that they say like, I don't like this about you, this is, I love you, like, but this is a flaw. Like, if you want to work on it, that's fine. I love you regardless, but I'm going to point out to you where you've gone wrong in this. And I feel like Knightley would be someone who says like, look, Lizzie, I think you need to be like cautious that you're trusting the wrong people in this situation. He wouldn't tell her what to do, but he'd point out like, I'm not sure if that's the right thing, because I feel like Knightley has such a good emotional compass that he can sense when people are like wrong-uns, you know. He's like, I don't feel right, like with Frank Churchill, like all the way through, like he doesn't even need to meet Frank Churchill, he's like, there's something off with this guy. Like, he has such an intuitive nature about him, where he, I think he even says in the book that he's like really prophetic, I think it says. I don't know if you've seen that. And it's like he's almost psychic. He's like, you know, he has this sense about people. And I feel like Elizabeth would benefit from that, because I think Elizabeth jumps on what people say to her before thinking about it on a kind of deeper level. So I think she'd benefit from that mentorship from Knightley, where he's like, let's take a step back, let's think about this. You know, you don't have to have facts to accept if somebody's wrong or somebody's not a great match for you as a friend. You know, sometimes you can just have a bad feeling and that's enough.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I love that. That made me, oh my gosh. Okay. Cause I thought first, when you first said that about Mr. Knightley challenging Elizabeth, I thought, well, Mr. Darcy challenges her too. But I realize it's Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth challenge each other in a way that's less healthy. It's like Mr. Darcy challenges, but it was in the form of an attack without the emotional intelligence. And so, and Elizabeth would challenge back, but they'd both become so defensive and shut down. Whereas I think, just like you said, I think Mr. Knightley's social intelligence, and I'd say too, humor, would make them be able to challenge one another, but in a way where they could talk through and communicate through something instead of shutting down and separating. And I think that is perfect. I think they are really a match of equals to me. I think they're a power couple. I think they would appropriately really challenge each other. I think they both have this great Ravenclaw and Gryffindor energy about them. And I think the biggest thing to me that Elizabeth and Darcy are missing in their relationship is a sense of humor. And I think Mr. Knightley's humor and wit would more equally match Elizabeth's. And I think that would add to their communication too in a positive way.
Yes. I mean, Mr. Knightley loves a bit of sarcasm. Mm-hmm. Like, he's right for that. So yeah, I think, yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't make this match myself, and I just love it. I love it so much. This might end up being my favorite match. We'll see how we get on. I made so many matches for Mr. Knightley and this wasn't one of them, and I'm feeling it.
I'm so curious to hear who you put Mr. Knightley with.
You know what? The majority of my Mr. Knightley matches are like queer matches. I'm just like totally drawn to Mr. Knightley being with a man. I genuinely am. Like, when I was like cross matching him, I was just like, there were so many heroes that I was like, wow, that would be such a match. So I thought about Knightley and Henry Tilney together, because I just think they'd have the best banter. And I think both of them are such, like you were saying about Elizabeth, I think both of them, they observe society, you know, and they don't need to like make a comment on it, but they, inside their own heads, they can be like, okay, this is funny, or this is going on. And they can be like, you know, having their own laugh about it privately and be like, oh, this is so funny. And I feel like Henry brings the playfulness to the relationship that Mr. Knightley necessarily doesn't have. Mr. Knightley can be like sarcastic and kind of, he can get involved with the banter, but Henry's like, he's the one that's like, let's go and dance and let's go and do something that's fun. And I feel like he would bring the playfulness out of Mr. Knightley, which is what Mr. Knightley likes about Emma. And I was just like, those two together, can you imagine? They'd be like the most fun, like, pairing. I would invite them to my parties. I would just, yeah, I would just love them together.
Oh my gosh. I think you're going to laugh so hard because this all kind of clicks together in a just really funny way because yes, I completely agree with you that Mr. Knightley is going to be attracted to someone who has a playful energy and this sense of humor, right? Like I was like, I see him attracted to that in Emma. I can see him being attracted to that in Elizabeth. And what's really funny to me is you saw Mr. Knightley and Mr. Tilney together. And for Elizabeth, the only two men that I could see her with outside of Darcy, it was Mr. Knightley and Mr. Tilney. Originally, I had Elizabeth with Mr. Tilney.
Oh my gosh, see? Really?
I ended up putting Emma with Mr. Tilney, and Mr. Knightley's interested in Emma, and I just said that Mr. Knightley and Elizabeth would, I don't know, it's just very funny to me.
That is funny. Really, the perfect match isn't a match, it's really just like a triple, and it's like Elizabeth, Henry Tilney, and Mr. Knightley. That is... That is the union that we need.
That is so, and yeah, I think Mr. Knightley and Mr. Tilney, just like you said, have that same, social intelligence and way of observing people and reading people extremely well.
But I also think that Knightley would be able to check Henry Tilney in a way that Catherine can't. Like Catherine is quite naive and she's so enamored by Henry that she just goes along with anything he says. Like he guides Catherine, whereas Knightley's so mature that I feel like he would guide Henry, which I think that's quite a good dynamic. Like I feel like Knightley, for whatever reason, would always be in the mentorship role. I can't see him being with somebody that mirrored him in that sense. He has to be with somebody who needs mentorship. Like he has to be with a student.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because it's interesting you say mentorship because it does feel like in Mr. Tilney's relationship with Catherine, he's the mentor to her. And I'm like, I think they're very cute together, but at the same time, it does feel like because she's so naive, sometimes I'm like, is this relationship equal? And sometimes I think Mr. Tilney needs someone to put him in his place. He gets a little smug. He gets a little too, the jokes are a little too much sometimes. And I think Mr. Knightley's the person to definitely put a person in their place. So I definitely see that.
Yeah, yeah. That was my first match. Do you want to call one of your others for Knightley if you have any, or do you want me to carry? Knightley is the one that I ran with. I was like, all the others, I was like, I can't think of anybody. And Knightley, I was like, I've got so many choices.
It's interesting. I initially had Mr. Knightley with Anne Elliot because I just thought that he would really appreciate her sweetness, her judgment, her kindness. And I don't know, I just had them together and I was like, something feels wrong. And I realized, oh, I think the reason I put Mr. Knightley and Anne Elliot together is she's more like a Jane Fairfax character. Obviously, I love Anne a lot more than Jane Fairfax and she has, but I think what Mr. Knightley admires about Jane Fairfax, he would admire in Anne. And but then at the end of the day, I was like, Mr. Knightley needs someone with that extra spunk and energy and humor like we talked about. So it didn't quite fit.
Yeah, I did play around with Knightley and Anne. But again, I was just like, I don't think there'd be any passion there.
Yeah.
Like it'd be respect, but not passion. And I feel like you got to have both, really, exactly. You know, for like a successful relationship. So, yeah, for me, I was a little bit not sure about that, but I did, for the reasons that I was going to pick Anne, I kind of went with Catherine because I was like, Catherine has all the playfulness and the fun and kind of the immaturity that Emma has, but also she's more aloof, like Jane Fairfax, where she is a little bit more private. Like if you think about the ways in which John Thorpe shows himself up constantly, but Catherine doesn't call him out for it or tease him about it like someone like Elizabeth would. I think Catherine is really good at just being a bit more private about like what she's thinking and feeling and her thoughts on society, but she's also fun and playful and imaginative and creative, which I think Knightley might like.
I agree with all of your arguments, and in my head I'm like, wait, would this be the perfect balance of everything But at the same time, I'm like, I can't see them together. I can't see Catherine with Mr. Knightley. And I don't know why, because I'm hearing everything you're saying. Like, she has the intellectual, interest that he has that Emma doesn't have.
No, I know exactly why you don't see it. I think it's status. They're not equals. And that is something that he has with Emma that I think is really important, especially in the village, like being in Highbury. Is I actually do think status is really important. And although Mr. Knightley is super humble and he doesn't see status as a limitation, like he doesn't think about that with Robert Martin, you know, he loves Robert Martin and respects him and thinks he's an incredible person. However, when it comes to your partner in your position in society, I do think status matters to him. He sees Emma as an equal. And I think that's why he never would have considered Jane Fairfax, because he is a leader in society. In Although Jane and Frank get together, Jane and Frank are like outcasts in a sense, because they're in adoptive families and they kind of float around the country. Whereas Emma and Mr. Knightley are very grounded.
I think that's a good point, that he and Emma, they do have the same level of status, and he and Catherine, yes, they wouldn't fit because of that. Then I'm like, why do I see Mr. Knightley and Elizabeth together? And I think, now I'm thinking, is it a level of sophistication? Like, I actually, weirdly, if Jane Fairfax had more of Emma's spunk, I could see Mr. Knightley with her. And I'm like, okay, even though she comes from more of a humble upbringing, I think Emma, Jane Fairfax, and Elizabeth Bennet all have this level of poise and sophistication about them that Catherine Morland just doesn't have.
Another thing as well, I think it's self-sufficiency. Because I think all of those three characters would be okay on their own. Jane Fairfax would be a governess. Elizabeth was happy to be unmarried. Emma was happy to be unmarried. Whereas I think Catherine always would have been more codependent than the other three.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it. I think Mr. Knightley would have been okay with being standing alone. I don't think he ever set his sights on marrying. I think he's fine standing by himself. And I think it sort of caught him by surprise that he fell for Emma. And he's like, oh, I actually want this. And Emma felt the same way. She wanted to live alone, and she was celebrating it. Yeah. And then Elizabeth was fine being alone. And yeah, Jane would have been a governess. And the Frank Churchill thing kind of caught her by surprise. That's exactly it. Whereas Catherine, you know, she's going to end up with someone and be like super codependent with them.
Yeah, because she's just like a total romantic. And obviously she meets Henry when she's super young as well. And she just falls head over heels for him. Like, I always talk about the fact that Northanger Abbey is the easiest romance, because the conflict in that book has got nothing to do really with Henry and Catherine. It's always external people. It's Isabella Thorpe or it's Captain Tilney. It's not got anything to do with Henry and Catherine's feelings for each other, like Pride and Prejudice and Emma is, you know, where it's all that kind of like discovering your feelings. Catherine from the first ball, she's like, Henry's the one.
That is such a good point, because the other novels, there are a lot of ups and downs and like evolution in the relationship. But you're right, the conflict in Northanger Abbey isn't really about Catherine and Henry. Oh my gosh, when you say that, I'm kind of thinking, I see Catherine as marrying young. Like, I see her marrying her high school sweetheart, and that often doesn't work out for people, but I see her marrying young and it working for her.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Oh my gosh, I love it though. I love this conversation.
Me too. Oh, this is awesome. I felt like we just kept coming up with new.
I know. Oh my God, we joined the call. Like, we might not have much to say here, guys. Next thing you know, we're like 3 hours in. Like, we've got more to say. We got lots to say.
We always have lots of things to say. We're like, oh,
no. I know. Yeah. I love that you were like, is it okay, this might be a shorter episode. And I'm just like, let's just see how it goes. Next thing you know, we're literally just spent half an hour on each potential matching.
Oh my gosh.
So funny.
So fun to think about though, you know, like once you get started, there are just so many reasons you can think of. And it's cool too, to think about a character that you know in the context of the relationship with the person they end up with, and then think about how they're the same person, but other parts of themselves can be amplified or brought out more if they were with someone with a different personality.
So true. And doesn't that just mirror like real life as well? Like, I don't think you'll ever find everything. You'll always have to sacrifice something that you could have had with somebody else, really. And you know what I mean? You just hope that you find enough with one person that you don't miss those things that you could have had with somebody else. But the point is, like, it'd be difficult to tick every single box, you know? And I think that's why this is kind of fun. It's like, you know, people choose like certain people and we think they're like amazing. And then we think about like you said, other parts that could have been brought out had they chosen somebody else.
Yeah. And, you know, it also just goes with the thought that, I don't know, at least with Disney movies and stuff, I think we were conditioned to think that our partner is going to be everything to us. And it's actually healthy to know that your partner is going to tick certain boxes, and then the other parts of you that need fulfillment you can find from friendships, family. This is actually interesting because the next couple I was going to put together, I see them together very well, but I have a caveat of the heroine would need a good friend to fulfill certain things that her partner wouldn't be able to, but I still think that they could have a really healthy relationship.
I think there's a difference between need and want as well when it comes to relationships. Mm-hmm. I think you should want your partner more than need them, because I think that partners shouldn't necessarily complete you, but complement you. And I think that's something to like consider as well, you know. And I think that's maybe what I think is difficult for Catherine is, I think, like we were saying, like more of a codependency that she would have compared to the other three. Whereas the other three would be happy. Elizabeth, Emma, and Jane Fairfax could live a fulfilling life on their own. And so anybody that they chose, it was a want, not a need. And I think that is so important. And I think that's why I buy into their romances more. Not that I don't love Catherine and Henry together, like they're super sweet, but there's something more mature about their choices.
Yeah, and if people have different levels of independence needs. I just, again, I think that hit the nail on the head when you said that about Emma, Elizabeth, and Jane Fairfax, because they were okay living alone. That fits Mr. Knightley, who would, I think he always would have been fine being a bachelor. So that just matches. Agreed. That need matches.
Yeah, I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay, tell me your next pick.
Okay, I'll go with, I think this goes with the theme of what we were just talking about with your partner ticks certain boxes, but then you may need friends to tick other ones. I see Catherine Morland and Charles Bingley together. I feel like I keep surprising you.
You do. You do. This is because I struggled with it so much. Everything will surprise me. Yes. Okay, tell me. Tell me your thoughts.
So I think they both have this kindness about them, this genuine kindness where they want to see good in people, and it's like it physically hurts them to see someone do something immoral or to see people be sneaky. Like Catherine has such a problem with Isabella's behavior and Isabella's infidelity. And similarly, Mr. Bingley, it really seems to cause him pain when Mr. Darcy is insulting Jane's family. Like both Catherine and Bingley want to live in this world where everyone gets along, it's peaceful, we're happy-go-lucky. And I see both of them, it's interesting. I know Catherine loves to retreat into her own little world and read books, and I think there is a part of her that likes to do that. But I think there's this other social, gregarious side where she likes going to the balls, she likes meeting people, she likes being in a community. And Mr. Bingley, I think, is someone who brings people together in the community and is very social. I could see the two of them being this very well-liked, social, happy couple that just wants the world to be like rainbows and daisies.
I kind of love that, you know. And you know, when you were just saying that, I kind of thought, I actually think Catherine would grow more than Bingley than she ever would with Henry. Like, I think with Henry, she'd be always frozen in time. Do you know what I mean? Like, she would progress into things like having children, being a wife and things, but I feel like to an extent she'd always be frozen in time with who she was when she met him. Whereas I feel like Bingley would always push Catherine to challenge herself. Like, she would grow with Bingley more. And I kind of love that for her.
Yeah, she When I think about her, she's sensitive. Like, I think she, even though she likes Henry's humor on some level, she doesn't fully understand it. And I think sometimes Henry's humor, she takes as mean-spirited, or she takes it literally, and then she gets kind of thrown off or defensive, or whereas I think, okay, originally I thought, okay, I see Catherine disposition-wise very much aligned with Bingley. I was like, but she loves books and she loves talking about books, and he's not as much of an intellectual. How will this work? And I think the way that it would work is she would need another friend that she explores literature with. And I think she would love to tell him the stories and talk about literature. And I think he'd be really patient and he'd be accepting and listen to the stories. And I think she's kind of anxious. And when she would get in her head and get sort of anxious, he'd be this positive, calming presence. And he wouldn't have that humor with the cutting edge that kind of throws her off that Tolney has.
Okay, interesting. When you were just saying that, I came up with like a bit of a caveat for why they wouldn't work. And okay. That's because Catherine would have to take on so much responsibility with Bingley. Like, Bingley is new money. He's trying to gain a property. He has sisters to look after. He will have an estate that he will own and have to run. And your wife will play a big part in that. And I don't think Catherine is confident enough to do that. Whereas Jane is, because Jane has been kind of like a head of the household in the Bennet family. Like, she is the mediator. She keeps things, everything level. You know what I mean? Like, her mom's like crazy all the time and she helps out there, but she's also on good terms with her father. Like, she is that mediator in the household. I don't think Catherine has the maturity to run an estate, which is why I think it works more with Henry that he's a clergyman as opposed to like this higher gentry position.
Ooh, that is such a good point, because I think emotionally, Catherine and Bingley would be supportive and work really well together, and they'd I see that really clicking. But you're right in that I don't think Bingley has a lot of the practical skills to be running an estate, and Catherine is kind of a dreamer too and a little bit in the clouds. So who between them would be able to take on the practical role as, I don't know, like matriarch, runner of the estate? Yeah, I see that there's a practical element missing with the estate and with the context that they have to work with.
Yeah, and I think we made a really good point in our Jane Bennet episode that we did, which I can definitely tag below if you've not listened to that one, because it's a really good episode. But Jane has the ability to put her feelings to one side. You know, she's able to separate that for the greater good. Like, we see that when Bingley goes away, and obviously she's distraught, but then other things happen within her family that she needs to step up to the plate. Like, Lydia runs off. Elizabeth goes away for a time. She's the eldest in the household. Everything has to still tick over, even though she's going through emotional turmoil, and she's able to place that to one side. And I don't think Catherine could do that. Like, Catherine gets so caught up in her emotions that I don't think she could separate those two things. And I think when it's not just about you and your partner, it's about an estate, it's about your staff, it's about the community in general, you've got to be able to look at it kind of objectively and make rational decisions. And I don't think Catherine would be capable of that on that scale.
You're right. Jane has this level of quiet resilience and ability to pull back from her feelings and step up in a practical way. She has this strength to her that Catherine doesn't, at least. And again, Catherine, we know she's young. She has time to grow. I think that's a very good point. I think the only other thing that I saw between Catherine and Bingley is, yes, they're both sort of naive, or they both can be carried away, influenced by the opinions of others for a period. And they are. They're kind of, they are manipulated by other people in a sense. But then at the end of the day, they come back. They see the manipulation for what it is, and they come back to being grounded, and they make the right choice for them. Like, Bingley gets manipulated by Darcy and his sister to leave Jane, go to London. And then eventually he comes back. And he proposes to Jane anyway. And then Catherine, same thing. She sort of gets, even though she always knows it's a little weird, she gets swept up by the Isabella stuff and by everything happening in her head. But then, you know, she comes back to Mr. Tilney. So I saw that. I was like, they have the potential to know what they need, but you're right. Would they, if they were running a home together and having a life together, would they both be too fly by the wind and too easily manipulated? Like, where's the person who is really grounded and staying on top of what needs to happen for the family?
You know, what you just made me think of then, though, is actually Catherine is much more healthy when it comes to toxic people. Like, when she finds out about Isabella's true intentions and Isabella sends that letter and she's like, hang on, no, like, you are a bad egg. Like, Catherine's able to be like, I can just cut you off. Like, I am not going to be in your toxicity. Like, this is over. This is the end. Whereas I don't think Bingley could do that. I think Bingley would keep toxic people in his life because he felt an obligation to do so. So I think there's something about Catherine, and I think she benefits from being around Henry in this sense, because Henry sees like toxic people and he's like, this person's toxic. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm just going to warn you that you need to look more closely at this. And Catherine in her own right could be like, I'm just going to cut that person off. Like, there's no time. There's no reason for me to waste my energy on this person. I think that's really healthy. And I think Jane and Bingley would struggle more with that. Like, it says it took them 12 months to move away from Mrs. Bennet because she was like around constantly. I think they'd really struggle to remove themselves from toxic people. I think Mr. Bennet makes that point that he says like they'd always be like cheated by their staff because they're both so kind and generous. And I think Bingley maybe would benefit from Catherine's kind of confidence to just be like, no, you're gone. I'm sorry. That's like, well, not even I'm sorry, just like you're gone because you're a bad person. That's it.
I agree. Catherine at the end of Northanger Abbey, I think she develops that view where she's like, I'm not going to tolerate people who don't have that moral compass. I'm okay with cutting them off. I think she always has a good intuition about toxic people, just like you said, but she doesn't initially trust it. Once she grows, she trusts it. And I think you're right. That would be a really good influence on Mr. Bingley because, again, it is physically painful for him to think badly of anyone. So I see the two of them working. I think, though, your point about practically speaking, who will help with the practical affairs running the home? I don't know if I see either of them doing that, but maybe we're underestimating them. I'm curious what, you know, listeners think.
Yeah, if we get to hear your thoughts, either let us know on Instagram or Spotify now has like a Q&A option. So I can definitely pop up some Q&A for each of these like potential couplings that we've made. So it would be good to hear your thoughts on those. So definitely check that out. Or if you're watching on YouTube, definitely hit us up in the comment section. It would be good to hear your thoughts.